Group Meeting, Friday, 3rd August, 1984. I think the time has come when each one of the people who come to our group meetings should, on his own and on her own, carry on the work, so to say. We have spent particularly this last year, I mean from last September, in examining several teachings in the great religions which I feel can no longer be substantiated. The belief in reincarnation, for instance, the belief in the particular presentation of the idea of karma, they are all rather inadequate and they simply won't do for our day and age. Then there are the beliefs which particularly apply to all the monotheistic religions, that there is an immortal soul attached to each living body, each living person, and that soul is judged after the death of the existential being, the psychophysical organism, and it receives the sentence of a hell or a heaven for all time. You remember I mentioned that we must ask the question, how is it possible for a finite, limited human being so to live that he deserves or brings upon himself an infinite consequence? It's completely absurd, I think. I don't know how you feel about it, but the millions of people in the world believe these things. Then again, there is the belief in several religions in resurrection. In some mysterious way, the soul will once again take up its old body. How on earth the bones will become enfleshed and blood and everything flow in it is, of course, is a question which has never been answered. Then again, religions like Hinduism and Buddhism, which do not accept these ideas, you see, I mean of resurrection and all the rest of it, they teach that there is the jivatma, or if you like, we can conveniently use the English word, the soul, which incarnates again and again until it has reached perfection. And the number of these incarnations is supposed to be so great, and they actually mention figures, that it makes one wonder that if a person lived, especially in past ages, for only about 30 years averagely, how is it possible for him to have experienced so many millions of incarnations when the human race, human beings like ourselves, only came into being about 4 million years ago and no more? So you see, we have to look into these things very carefully. How does the idea of a spirit, an immortal soul as it is called, come about? I think that man's dreams are the origin of his belief in survival after death. In the old, very old days, probably at the time when archaic Homo sapiens, who evolved out of Homo erectus. Homo erectus came on the scene about 4 million years ago. And about 1.5 million years ago, or maybe a little more, Homo sapiens came into being. That is, a human being whose anatomy was like our own. This is the difference, you see. You know, they have searched for the missing link, as they call it, and so forth. We are derived from the superfamily known as the Hominoidea. Noidea, you see. And they included the apes in Africa, the gorilla and the chimpanzee, in Asia, the orangutan and the gibbon, and they included the hominids, who became men, human beings, with this kind of structure. Now, if a person is going to have 1 million years, I beg your pardon, if a person is going to have 1 million lives and more, and he lives only 30 years, and is reincarnated immediately, well, you see, it just makes nonsense of the facts which we know today. So all those ideas should be dismissed. A man, when man like men like ourselves came into being, and they formed families, they formed tribes, and the tribes were not all by any means at peace with each other. They were very often at war with each other. And the strong man, of course, killed the weaker man, and so on. Now, having killed the weaker man, he thought he had put an end to him, an absolute end. But one fine night he had a dream, and he saw the man he had killed. Now, you know what it is like in dreams. You and I today, as we live in the world, when we have our dreams and we come across something which is a source of fear for us. I myself, for instance, in my young days used to dream of seeing a lion. You see? Now the astonishing thing is that in a dream, all your strength seems to disappear, or your legs refuse to run away. You just can't do a thing. You are helpless against that which was weaker than you before. So people, when they had dreams like these, must have woken up in fear and terror. And they thought that somehow something survives. This man I killed, but I saw him in my dream, and I couldn't prevail against him. So they thought that in some mysterious way something spiritual survived. And so spirits, the belief in survival and spirits came into being. And you know, man has an inveterate habit of reading himself and his ways of life into anything and everything. And especially when he looks to that which is the supreme, which is higher than himself, he reads himself into it. Look at the definitions of God, for instance. All the definitions of God and the descriptions of God are nothing but man's qualities raised to the nth degree. That is all. They are projections out of man's own brain. No such thing as a personal being, a God, exists. No such thing. This being who is supposed to be caring and looking after you and so forth and all the rest of it. And if there is such a being, sometimes perhaps he gets very angry and then he sends an earthquake or a galactic collision or some such thing like that. Then what? What's happened to this God? So you see, just as those ancient societies a million or 2 million years ago had chiefs, the chief of the tribe, and perhaps a very powerful tribe with a very powerful chief was the supreme ruler. So too the spirits must also have tribes, and they have a supreme ruler and so forth. Mind you, this is what I think. I may be entirely wrong, but I can only say what seems to me to be most likely. So these beliefs in survival and the afterlife with death and so forth came into being. And so they had to spin out all kinds of ideas. They used their imagination based upon their personal experience in the limited, finite human sphere on earth. They spun out these doctrines. And there is really not the slightest evidence that those doctrines have any validity. But it is important that we should be free of such beliefs, because when we are free of all this which is not truth in the real sense, that is what I say, remember. You see, when we are free of it, we are free of the belief, we are free of fear. Why do so many thousands of people strive to live the good life? If they look into their minds and hearts carefully, they will see that they are frightened of hell and the torments of hell. That is the reason why they try to live the good life. They don't want to go into the super warm place. Then again, there is another reason. They try to live the good life because they feel they are likely to get a pleasant reward after death. God and his angels and his and the heavenly hosts and the heavenly courts in which they will be find themselves will be their reward. And what is their reward? Constant singing. Constant repeating of prayers. This comes in the Zarathustrian teachings, that they will be constantly reciting the Avesta, the holy book. Good heavens. Now you see, when you really look at it carefully, you see how utterly foolish we human beings have been. Throughout hundreds of thousands of years. But the time has come now when we must throw all that aside. We must grow up. But in order to grow up and get past this very childish and foolishly childish state, we must be free of fear, and we must be free of wanting rewards, wanting something for ourselves. If we can see, as a matter of fact, let me put it in personal terms, if I can see, as a matter of fact, that there is nothing whatsoever for me, Firoz Mehta, the person who is named Firoz Mehta, after his death, If I can see that, then if I can live the good life, it will be truly good. It will be perfectly honest. There is no reward that I am going to claim. There is no fear of hell from which I am running away. You see? Then the human being will be human. Human. The blissful creator. Now you see, human beings thousands of years ago experienced bliss in the one and only way in which they could create. They could procreate their own kind. And it gave them a sense of extraordinary, indescribable happiness and so forth. Now, then they said, well, God up there, you see, He is the one who made the whole universe and so forth, and He must be blissful. So the word human really means blissful creator. It comes from the Sanskrit root man as well as the Avestan root hu, you see, which means happy, blissful. And the Pali su, su. So, in order to be creative in our life, we must necessarily be free of all that is harmful to true creativeness in our life. Fear, violence, suspicion, greed, hatred, illusions and delusions, and all that sort of thing. We have to be free of all that. Then we can begin to be human in the true meaning of the word human. So now, if those of us who meet here can see this clearly, and be able so to live every day, watchfully, mindfully, compassionately to themselves, then the psychophysical organism, the living person, John Brown or Mary Smith or whoever it is, will become more and more a true human. And by becoming more and more a true human, one's consciousness, which in the ordinary way is continuously isolative and separative, will become more and more holistic. It will become unitarily whole. And when one's inner consciousness becomes unitarily whole, then the living person is in tune with all the different archetypal forms of energy derived from the primordial creative energy which do function through the universe. Forms of energy which are not only visible and which we know of and can control and so forth, but invisible and unknown, but which we can sense more and more truly as our own consciousness becomes purer and more unitarily whole. In becoming unitarily whole, we cease to be exclusively conscious of ourselves as just us, separate from everybody else, separate from all creation and so forth. That separateness is the fundamental state of sin. That which sin essentially means that which hurts or denies or tends to destroy the unity of the universe. That is the fundamental meaning of sin. You see? So now, when consciousness becomes holistic, becomes whole and inclusive, then the very root of sin is gone. it has been completely eliminated. Then it becomes possible for us to benefit the world in which we live. One has to benefit oneself first and foremost. I'm talking in terms of spiritual development, of that type of development which makes us truly human. When we benefit ourselves in that manner and become truly human, the invisible energies that function are able to utilize us as instruments through which good, in the true sense, in the real sense, can be brought about in the world. You see, in becoming whole and complete and true humans, we become, as we say, enlightened. And in that enlightened state, there is not only wisdom, there is also compassion and goodness and tremendous power which can be used for helping all human beings in whatsoever condition they may be. So we have first to become like that, and in becoming like that we have benefited ourselves, haven't we? So then we can benefit others. Supposing, now, well, we know this for a fact, appeals are made for research work, for cancer research or whatever it is and so forth. Well, if I haven't got money, how can I give anything in response to that appeal? I can't do it. In the same way, I can't help other people except in so far as I myself have and therefore can give that which is truly valuable and helpful. This is the point. That is why the purification of oneself is so important, which means fundamentally the moralities, the silas, you see, ritta, as the Rig Veda put it, Asha, as Zarathustra put it, you see, Dharma, as Hinduism put it, and the Dhamma, as the Buddha put it. That is what it comes to, the living of the Dhamma. You see, our brains are now sufficiently developed through this immense span of time to be able to penetrate into all this, understand it, and not get fixated. This is very important. We may get inspiration, real inspiration. And we find it very valuable for ourselves and maybe for our friends. But we must never make that inspiration a fixation. Because once an idea, however true, noble, good, helpful, becomes a fixation, you have stopped growing. There is no end to growth. We say in the ordinary way that the Buddha was enlightened when he was 35. He started at 29, and when he was 35, he was enlightened. And of course, the vast millions of Buddhists, and the same applies to other religions according to their own teacher and so forth, you see. If the Buddha stopped at that enlightenment at 35, he wouldn't have grown any further. But he did. He did grow further. Because he was 51 when he gave out the teachings which are the foundational teachings of Mahayana Buddhism. You see? And the same thing has happened with the other teachers. We don't know much about Zarathustra because of his life we have extremely little information. Extremely little. But I'm sure that a similar thing must have happened in his case. And of course in our own day and age we have seen the extraordinary transformation that has taken place since Krishnamurti first started teaching. What he says now and presents now is something utterly different from the starting point. So you see, there is no end to our growth, and we must grow, we must keep growing. Therefore, no fixations. The moment you have a fixed idea, this is the final truth, the absolute truth, is the most untrue thing ever said. There is no finality involved, because the finality or not finality is only concerned with the mode of presentation. The teacher said this, that and the other. That means he presented certain concepts, certain ideas. But you see, the mind continuously grows. And when the teacher experiences that growth, he gives different ideas, different which do not contradict the previous ideas as being absolutely false. Bear that in mind. They are a development, actually, of what went before. There is no end to the development of consciousness. We are nowhere near the fruition point, the culminating point of the evolution of consciousness. And the human race will experience a certain type of culmination which will be characteristic of the human constitution. Whatsoever energy needs to manifest must have the appropriate apparatus. But that apparatus can come to its fulfillment, but no further growth can take place. When it has come to its fulfillment, the apparatus itself has to change. Take evolution itself, where we humans are concerned. We started off about 40 million years ago. And considerable changes took place. About 23 million years ago, rather important changes took place. And then finally, there emerged the hominoidea, and from the hominoidea, the hominids, ourselves, and so forth. And we too have undergone a tremendous change from the time when the first two-legged creatures, the bipedal humans, came on the globe. We have undergone tremendous change, and we will keep on undergoing tremendous change. When the apparatus changes, the profounder aspects of transcendent energies begin to manifest through us. It makes it possible for the transcendent energies, when the right instrument is there, to function in the world. So you see, that is one of the purposes of our existence. And another purpose, if you like to put it in words, but don't make it a fixed idea, is that our consciousness grows in order to reach its culmination in terms of unitary wholeness. So now, if after these 20 years, 22 years of meetings in this room, each one of us, not all of us have been here 22 years, and our dear friend there has not been here even 22 hours, but each one of us, after all these years, if we really live what we have been able to gather in our meetings, really to live it and release faculty and power out of ourselves, we shall be a light unto the world. Each one will be a light. And remember, each one has to be his own kind of light. Don't, for heaven's sake, try to follow in the footsteps of the Master. That can never be done. The primordial creative energy and nature, if you like, have displayed the most extraordinary variety of men in manifestation. Look, you and I all know not even two leaves on a tree are absolutely alike. They are different. They are unique. And in man, on this globe, rather than in any other kingdom in this world, you see, this uniqueness has gone furthest. We are each and every one of us unique. Let that uniqueness develop and emerge. But remember, in saying I am unique, it is not I in the sense of the limited ego. It is not the ego-conscious person the uniqueness is actually the uniqueness of transcendence itself. Use God or Brahman or Allah or any word you like to represent the ultimate reality, you see. It is that which is expressing itself in countless myriads of different forms and different perfections throughout the universe. It's a marvelous thing. You know, the hairs of my head don't stand up because they stood up and went away long ago. But I can feel the hairs of my body sort of when I sort of feel and think these things. It's so marvelous, it's so wonderful. It is this which is the real source of infinite joy. Joy in the real sense, not the joy which upsets and makes a noise. But that extraordinarily quiet, peaceful state, which is true bliss. This is associated with what in Hinduism has been called Nirvana, in Buddhism Nibbana. It is associated with that, you see. And it is the consequence of the complete purification of the individual, this blissful state. And in that blissful state, you can wield, and you'll know when you're wielding it. You will know in your own body, in your own brain, you'll know when you're wielding it. You will be wielding that spiritual power which benefits everything around. I have said this again and again. You will be like the sun. The sun doesn't know that it is sending light and heat to us. It just is the sun. It's the nature of the sun to be what it is. And it is because it is the nature of the sun to be what it is, all this happens on the planets of the solar system. So, be like the sun. And that way, you will make the world different. That is important. See, we won't be meeting here after the next 20 years. Maybe long before that. Everything comes to an end. But before the end of something which has been worthwhile and good, become yourself, become the sun, and create your own solar system.